We are honored to have with us today a well-known IoT and social media influencer, Dr. Marcel Abbas, and together with our dialogue session moderator, Dr. Yeo from FET Malacca also, they will be engaging in an insightful discussion on the topic enabling the smart world of tomorrow, innovations and challenges in engineering and technology. Before we proceed to the event, allow me to share some bio data about Dr. Marcelan. Okay. Dr. Marcelan is the CEO and co-founder of Favorite, an IoT company. He is also recognized thought leader in the IoT industry, having been listed as a top 50 influencer by several organizations. He has extensive experience in the telecommunications industry also, including as a CEO of Redtone IoT, a senior director at Mimos Berhad, and various senior management positions at Cellcom. Dr. Marcelan has also worked as a professor at several universities in Malaysia and is also currently an adjunct professor at the Faculty of Information Science and Technology, MMU. He graduated from University of Technology Malaysia with a BEE and from University of Essex with a MSc in Telematics and University of Technology Malaysia with a PhD in Telecommunications. He has also received an honorary doctorate in Electrical Engineering from UTHM. He is a frequent speaker at IoT, IL 4.0, Smart Cities and Telco conferences and serves on the industry panel for several universities. He is also a TEDx speaker and has received an honorary doctorate in electrical engineering from UTHM. So our moderator for our session is Dr. Yeo Boon Chin. He is the senior lecturer in FET and also our deputy dean. Before we proceed to the event, a friendly reminder to all participants, the Google Meet is being recorded. Do remember to turn off your mic. If you have any questions during the dialogue session, you may either use the raise hand function in Google Meet or type your questions in the chat box and the moderator will address the questions when the time is correct. Without further ado, I would like to invite Dr. Yeo to proceed with the dialogue session.
Thank you very much, our MC, Mr. G. I'm Yeo Boon Chin from Faculty of Engineering and Technology. So I'm also the moderator of today's dialogue session. The topic of today's dialogue session will be on enabling the smart world of tomorrow, innovations and challenges in engineering and technology. We are very happy and very proud to have Dr. Marcelan Abbas, the CEO and co-founder of Favorite Sdn Bhd, an IoT company actually in Puchong, Selangor, Malaysia, right? Dr. Marcelan actually has posted quite many articles related to IoT and smart city. He also has been giving many talks related to this kind of topic. So I would like to welcome Dr. Marcelan to say hi to our audience and continue with your and share your topics of today. Right. Over to you, Dr. Marcelan.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Yeo. I think this is a very timely topic that we are, you know, in this our era of IR 4.0, I think we can't run away about talking about the smart world of where we are living with. You know, the IR 4.0 comprises of a lot of technologies which can help us in making ourselves living in the future much better. So we see that the foundation of this the whole our smart world is the people here. We are the engineering people, the technology people. They actually the foundational blocks of building this smart world. So we are very, I think, very fortunate enough to be in this part of the discipline. In fact, to architect the smart world. If we see that, for example, in the engineering discipline that we are looking at, we are seeing now that engineering is not only about, you know, building things, but actually engineering discipline solves the problem, making systems more better, improve the systems. Now, people like us, the engineers, are actually the one that becomes the whole architect, the people we call the designers, the builders of the systems. And we also have the responsibility to ensure the integrity of the whole structure of what we build. So we are responsible to build that kind of infrastructure to ensure that when we talk about smart world, we are talking about devices that will connect, you know, between things, between humans, and between the communities themselves. So, for example, we see that in the areas like civil engineering, for example, they are the people who build smart buildings which have, you know, very energy efficient. We see that people who in the software engineers, the people who are responsible to make better advanced coding algorithm for maybe you're looking at the upcoming autonomous vehicles. This role of engineering in is very very vast areas. We are very embedded in many of the intelligent world aspect. But we also see that other than engineering that we are looking at this, the foundation of the whole structure, we see technology itself. For example, in this technology, how we work, we are seeing that technology actually powers the whole smart world. The technology is that themselves is actually the one that drives the future. We are going to see a lot of these technologies. We have been talking about AI, IoT, 5G, and all these technologies are the heart of this whole transformation, making us better or, you know, in a better world. So this is something that we need to understand, how this technology, in fact, can become the enabler for making our world more predictable in a sense, because we have that intelligent, making intelligent decisions. So we see IoT is also one of the things that, you know, they collect the data. I'll talk that one later. But most important of all, I think these two worlds of engineering and technology, they cannot stand alone. They have to work together. So for people who are in the engineer side, who that design very smart things, we also couple with the technology advancement that we have learned new things. This actually will drive our future engineers in building what we call a very complex systems in the future. So this is something that we can see how the interplay of this these two disciplines actually shape the smart world. Yeah.
Hi, Dr. Maslan. Yeah, before I continue, just maybe there are some of our members over here, audience over here, they are not sure about what is about the smart world. So let me mention a bit about the definition of smart world. Smart world is a concept of digital world that evolved from the definition of ubiquitous computing and promotes the ideas of a physical world that is richly and invisibly interwoven with sensors, actuators, displays, and computational elements, embedded seamlessly in the everyday object of our lives and connected through a continuous network, right? So that's a formal definition of smart world. Mm. Okay, Dr. Maslan, so what are some of the key technological innovations, right, that are driving the transformation towards the smart world? So as we know that Malaysia, we are undergoing this digital transformation. So what can you say about this?
Yeah, I think we have heard the recent, not the recent announcement, but we have started to move with this new initiative, what we call the Industry Forward, which was launched in sometimes in 2018. So that 2018, they have identified that we are now moving towards the era of Industry Revolution 4.0. Under that era of IR 4.0, they have defined several technology pillars. And it depends on the area of your industry. That technology pillars can be different. So for example, when Malaysia launched Industry Forward, it is very much skewed to what we call the manufacturing industry. So when it boils down to manufacturing industry, there are certain technologies like 3D printing is one of them. We talk about cloud computing, IoT, virtual reality, AR. So these are the pillars of technology which in fact the key innovations of that drive that transformation. And I think, as you know, that as we move towards from one era to another era, we can see that transformation, the era of analog, you know, making it into electrical, into something which is disconnected. Now everything is now being connected. Previously, we teach students using online, and what we are using now, webinar, and it has been transformed into a much better. For example, in the era of education 4.0, you might be teaching the students differently. You might use robots. You know, robots is part of the new era, a smarter world. You talk about having a virtual reality to enhance your teaching environment. You use augmented reality. And that are the things that we are seeing, this kind of the new technological innovations that can change that landscape. So I think the recent one that we are talking about, AI, is used to be called AI, but now people are very excited about the new, what we call the generative AI, right? The generative AI that's more intelligent when you give more inputs to the whole system. And in fact, that is one of the things that like ChatGPT have drive a lot more new ways and helping us to become better and more efficient in doing things. Né? I think a lot of people who's doing, like, for example, like myself, doing a lot of content writing, for example, I'm being in the social media. Sometimes I'm not an expert in social media to write good copywriting. So for example, like me, I use ChatGPT to help me to do that copywriting in the form of a better way of, their frameworks of marketing, for example. So that actually helped me in building my content. So I think a lot of things, the underlying technologies of AI, the machine learning part is very, very key. In the area of IoT, for example, the one that we have been doing for many years, technologies like IoT have been around for many years, since 1999. So it was not so new, but for some people, they thought it's quite new, but in fact, it's all around 23 years ago. But only now that we know that the importance of IoT, where sensors now can be everywhere to collect a lot of data. But then where do you send the data, for example? So in the case that you need to have a cloud, you need to have a middleware to collect, aggregate all these different kind of data. But what is the use of data if you just collect into a single database or your own collection of data, but you need to do some insights of the data? That's why you need to incorporate areas like machine learning to do that. So these are the advancements that we are looking at, that AI and IoT now merge together. We look at new technologies that can enhance the applications for the smart world. You know, at one time, maybe normal sensors can be connected, but beyond that, you see that applications which is low latency, you know, you need high speed communications. 5G is now that you're seeing now. So that is a very key technologies that we are having it now. Now we see that technologies like 5G is almost everywhere. Everyone is being using that. So that are some of this new, what we call the technological advancement, that is what we are seeing now in this era.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Maslan. I think you mentioned about quite many kind of technologies involved this for smart world later. I think you also mentioned about those technology, I believe, is in the 9 pillars of Industrial 4.0. So we would like to know, I believe many audience would like to know, so what are the main challenges and obstacles that engineers and technologists will face in implementing the smart solution in a large scale later?
Oh, okay. So yeah, you are right. In a smaller scale, it's easier for us to navigate this kind of challenges. But the moment you go big, then it's become a very big challenge. One of the things is that, of course, the fundamental part is the infrastructure. Infrastructure is very important in making a smart world because it requires data. And there, where is actually the data? So the data comes from different places. And you need the right infrastructure to send that kind of data. So what I mean is the right networks, whether it's a very low speed network, like what in IoT, we might have what we call low power wireless area network, very small packets that you can send it. You have heard about LoRa, Sigfox, NB-IoT. These are some of the what we call the sensor networks. But then there are other applications to make it, like for example, high-speed network. You need to send video with 4K, 8K kind of video. So you need high-speed connectivity. So you need that kind of 5G infrastructure to be there. So and now we have seen that there's a lot of other applications in the rural areas where it's very underdeveloped. You don't have coverage. Fortunately, now we have Starlink. So that's one of the good way of building infrastructure quickly. We have nearly 100% of coverage when the satellite is here. So that can hit. That one is one of the things. Another challenges that we face is that because these technologies are working with each other, different technologies. So you have to ensure that they have to work seamlessly. So we need to understand that it requires integration. How you can integrate different kind of systems. So that requires a very, what we call, extensive or very technical expertise in ensuring that you can, that kind of integration can do seamlessly. And then when you talk about the smart world, talk about data, this data is very important. So the amount of data that we have collected is very crucial for us to, because data can make us better making decisions. But it also poses a lot of concerns. For example, the data security, data privacy. So they are prone to cyber attacks. And we have seen a lot of times that data have been breaches. So data breach, your data has been used by a lot of scammers nowadays. So how do we do that? So engineers and technologists like us have to find a way of how to ensure when they design the systems, making it smart, but to ensure that it is also very robust. To ensure that security measures is always there. We don't want security to be afterthought. So we build that kind of security actually at the design stage. So we have to ensure when we say that we collect personal information, we have to ensure that you also protect the user privacy. Technology for us is not only talking about technology per se, but you have to ensure that data protection law, the legal aspect, we have to comply with that. We have to understand that part of the equation. Another thing is that we are so excited about technology, but then sometimes technology can also separate us. For example, the one that cannot afford, cannot access this technology. So they're becoming like a bigger digital divide. One in the rural areas, one in the urban areas. They don't have the equal access. They don't have the effort, they can't afford that kind of technology. So we see that disparity can in fact leads to what we call the social inequality. You will marginalize certain groups of people. So how do people like us, the engineers, the technologists, we have to find the solutions in a way that making them accessible, making them more affordable for all kind of users. It's not only the one like we call the T20 will have all the access, but B40 are being left behind. Another thing is that challenges that we're going to face is the user acceptance. A lot of solutions nowadays fail because they couldn't get real acceptance by the end users. Why? Because maybe the engineers think differently. We design things which is very complex, and the users don't know how to use the systems. So people like us need to find a way to develop what we call a very user-friendly way of using the technology itself, the applications. And also we have to find a way of how to gain the trust of the user when they use that kind of applications. So it's something that is, what can we do? I mean, people like us, the engineers, the technologists, you have to find a way of how to educate them. You have to show them the benefits of these solutions. You you have to show them that, you know, you have to elevate, throw away all this fear of this misconception about technologies making them obsolete, for example. Yeah. So even though it's, this thing are very exciting, but we need to understand there's a lot of challenges to make sure that we get the user acceptance right, you know, understanding the protection law of the data, having the infrastructure be more accessible to others. So don't think that we are only cater for what we call the T20 group of people. We have to also cater for the B40 part, you know, people in Malaysia too. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Maslan, for the insightful explanation on how we're going to implement the smart world. I believe there are many technologies, and not only technologies, engineers involved in building the smart world. We need a lot of people from different backgrounds also. All right. So let's say if we focus on this technology area, so I wonder, how can an interdisciplinary collaboration between different engineering fields, right, or and technology sectors to contribute to the development of a smart world?
It's an interesting question, because nowadays engineering, at one time I see that a lot of discipline in the universities are very silo-oriented. Silo means that they have their own faculty, engineering faculty, and you know, like even before that, we have electrical, electronic, and then we have computer science. But then when we look at the future, what we have now is that this convergence of ICT, so become one, and this part of this enabler become go across the whole discipline, not even only within particular discipline. So it's interesting to see that when we design things, for example, in our experience building smart city, it's not who actually wants to build a smart city. Is it one discipline that actually build a smart city? Actually, it covers a lot of people, engineers that build the whole smart city. I give an example. When we build, a smart grid in a smart city, when we build a smart grid, who do you require in building a smart grid? One, you do require electrical engineers, of course. These are part of the people who have that discipline of power engineering, power electrical and all that. But then you also need to have computer scientists, to do the program, to the analytical part. You need the data analyst. And of course, you might even get the environmental scientists to be there. So there are different disciplines in ensuring that you have very efficient power network. You have a very resilient one, a very sustainable power network. So then you have to break this kind of silos, because if you want to boost innovation, you must get this different group of engineers or technologists together. So you build solutions in a very holistic view. You look at, for example, smart transportation. You cannot build on one aspect of the engineers where you build the roads and that's it. No, you can't do that. You need the civil engineers to look at the infrastructure at the road. You need the software engineers to ensure that, you know, a mobility, the traffic lights are more intelligent. You need the environmental scientists to ensure that it's, you know, a zero carbon kind of thing. You need urban planners to build cities, not just 5 years, 10 years down the road. They must have the vision of building cities even up to 50 to 100 years, because we are living in that kind of city generations, you know. So smart transportation itself requires a lot of this discipline together. You use AI, you use IoT, you use town planners to do that. So for me, I think building this kind of world is very, very complex. The smart world is very complex, multidimensional. We need diverse skill, set of skills, diverse kind of knowledge. No single discipline can solve a problem. We have to bring everyone together, pull these ideas together, building a world is not like one hero that you're looking at. You know, security is one aspect of them. You know, you need what you call the cybersecurity professionals to help you. Even you need a legal aspect to talk about the privacy, data privacy part. And then I think it's time for us nowadays is that we see that this collaboration of interdisciplinary discipline requires us to learn, respect each other, and grow together. I think the professionals within that discipline, you have to broaden your knowledge, because in order for you to innovate more, yeah. So I think this continuous improvement is required in this kind of what we call this dynamic world. So smart technologies require smart people and smart engineers together. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Maslan, yeah, before we continue, we have one audience is raising hand. Okay.
Yeah.
Senanan Yake Mudiyan Selagai. All right. So you are raising your hand. You may raise a question to Dr. Maslan.
That's right. That's right. Sorry, my name is Nama La Roche. Of course, Zelnak Mudian Zelagi is the surname. But it's all right. I'm new staff. I'm new to entire MMU.
Okay, nice to meet you.
Yeah. My question is that, yes, you were talking about transdisciplinary nature of the requirement for smart world. Yeah, but all in all, when it comes down to the grassroots level, our undergraduates. So how can they inculcate these ideas in our curriculum? What are the changes we have to do? I'm asking a very probably blunt question. What is the kind of percentage we have to include for our curriculum in order to cater a smart world in the future, such as, for example, I am in computer science. So then we have, I would say, because I'm not favoring computer science, but I can see that when it comes to this nature of products and services, require the one of the, I can say one of the main component is really computer science. I don't say that electrical engineers are not required and so forth, but major component today is that. But then, what happened that really usually programmers are nasty because they don't talk to others because they sit and do the coding and coding. So then if we want to integrate other faculties such as health sciences, particularly psychology and all these things, what is the kind of percentage we have to include to our computer science curriculum for example, for electrical engineers as well? So whether 40% of the curriculum should be from other faculties, or it's not that big percentage required for undergrads. Unless otherwise we prepare students from the beginning, when it comes to postgrad, it might be too late. Because postgrads may basically, most of the time, they do research. So then they are already then, what we call it, they are inside a box, and then they don't see outside the world. Thank you so much. Sorry.
I do get that kind of questions. Even though I'm not be the best person to give you the percentage because I'm not in the academic world, from the industry part of view is that this kind of new discipline when the interdisciplinary part is required by the industry. So the question now you're saying is that where exactly, how percentage? This is sometimes which we always... I do understand the universities have issues. For example, in Malaysia, they have issues of having this quality, you know, by the MQA, the EAC. They have some limitations, especially in the engineering part. The computer science might not be that main issue, but the engineers have that kind of limitations on, you know, in terms of what kind of syllabus and contents. But I do believe that the thought of having this interdisciplinary have to be inculcated at the very early stage when the graduates enter the university. Most of the time when they enter the university, they don't know exactly when they go up where they're going to be and what is the world going to be out there once they finish after their 4 years in the universities. That's something that we didn't really highlight that at for the young graduates. Give them exposure. The subjects that they have learned actually have impact to the industry later. But you have to put all these pieces together in a very holistic view, the components of the subject, and they once they work together and what they will produce. Give them that first understanding. Then in the early stage of their studies in the universities, you can focus first on the foundational, meaning to say they should strengthen, whether if they are engineering, they're very good engineering, they're computer science, and good in the computer science part. But then when you go to the last year, the two semesters, I would suggest that the last two semesters will teach them subject which is the emerging technologies. The emerging technology is the one that can choose whether they're going to be in this area, this path, or this path. For example, they want to go more IoT, they want to go for more data analytics, they want to be more blockchain oriented, then they can go into that aspect because they have already learned the foundational aspect of whatever they have learned in engineering or the computer science. Then they can apply to that kind of discipline. Now that's what we feel, that once they enter the university, they understand the holistic view, they really appreciate the subject that they learn, where they're going to. Now they have a good time for them to choose which discipline in the last two semesters, the elective subjects that they will learn. So that's my suggestion. Thanks for the question.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for Dr. Maslan for the answer. Yeah. Before we proceed, is there any question from the floor? Yeah, so in MMU, we have the free elective subjects, such which is included in our BOC, build your own curriculum program, where students can actually freely select their elective based on the emerging technologies, mm-hmm. right, or in area what they want. Okay, and we also know that the artificial intelligence is a hot topic nowadays. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why in Multimedia University, we have incorporated the knowledge in the syllabus of many of our program, especially in engineering program and also IT programs. So we want to know from the industrial perspective, so in what way can the artificial intelligence and machine learning technologies be leveraged to optimize and enhance various aspects of a smart world?
Yeah, I think this AI subject and machine learning should be offered in all engineering and, you know, engineering discipline lah nowadays, regardless whether they're in electrical or what. I think that because it applies across the whole engineering. You know, you talk about civil engineering. I mean, all this thing, everything that use the brain, you need AI to be there. But maybe the complexity of learning AI and machine learning with all the algorithm, the mathematics, the statistics sort of thing, needs to be have that also. Otherwise, they can't manage. You know. Use this, learn these subjects. So it's, sometimes it's not that easy because people thought AI is just like, you know, ChatGPT. You know, you ask a question, it answers. But the foundational, I mean, the algorithm part might be very complex to some people. So it depends on what kind of how do you teach this AI, you know, in the universities. But let us take a look at how you mentioned that how it can optimize or enhance the smart world. I think there's a lot of things we can do. For example, in my case, when we work on smart cities, for example, when we turn this what we call smart cities, of course, smart cities require smart people, but the technologies part, of course, is going to be the AI part. Yeah, the one that who actually analyzed the real-time traffic data. Yeah? We used to have people, we have to use sensors, but now with the real-time traffic data, you can do even prediction of making sure that, you know, the queue length of the data at the queue length of the at the traffic light can be shortened if you make a proper the green and the red lights, you know, the timer and all that, so you can adjust the traffic light timings. You can predict traffic jams. You can even send most likely the traffic enforcement officers to help you reducing any congestion. So you can have that command center that look into the view, but this command center will have that AI part to help you in terms of helping the congestion, the traffic management. We see that AI also can play a role in safety, you know, smart surveillance, aspect, having looking at cameras which can detect any suspicious activities, making alerts, sending to the right authorities. So it can help that. In fact, for example, in other solutions in smart city, you can optimize the usage of parking, or predicting the electrical demand, and so on and so forth. So that is smart cities. But then also you look at the other aspect, in the industry aspect, we see a lot of applications nowadays having AI to help you in terms of predicting the equipment failures, scheduling you the right time for maintenance, this to ensure any downtime, you know, so you can improve your productivity. You can also improve your supply chain management. You know the where exactly that you can optimize your inventory. You know, you don't have warehouse which is overstock or understock, so you can improve your logistics timing. You know where exactly your items gonna be. You know, so it can help you to improve that kind of supply chain. Smart house. Maybe in Malaysia, I don't see a lot of AI inside there, but in other countries, they use AI to. I think they have this thermostat. They can learn the temperature inside your room, the usage, and they can adjust the temperature for your comfort. Yeah? So that's how they do it. I think healthcare also play a role. Healthcare AI, it helps us to detect any abnormalities of your, you know, disease or diagnosis, assist you in diagnosis. So it can improve that kind. So it helps the doctors and the nurse, for example. So I think a lot of things in any areas which use AI, you need brain. People, you don't have enough talent. You can have use AI to help you in a lot of matters, lah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Professor Masan. Well, I guess we now know there are various way to apply the AI, right, for the smart world. Just one question from my side. We know that when we are dealing with machine learning, we need a lot of data. So we just wonder, so whether in Malaysia, in many of the industry, are those data ready already?
That's why I think people learn AI and then they want to create new data scientists, but they don't have enough data to analyze. Either they use open data that they got somewhere else, which people have already collected, but we ourselves don't have that data. I think, first of all, you know, I think AI, whoever that works into a data analytics, need to find ways of collection of data. Malaysia itself, we are late in terms of collection of data. We used to have data, but when our data being collected, input into the what we call the open data Malaysia, there's this portal, but somehow that information are not clean. So I mean, too clean. The data, when is data is too clean, you miss a lot of data. So you don't want to do that. You want to have raw data that you can analyze further. Yeah. So you don't want data that already translated into a PDF file or something which is already in a graph. You want to have raw data. So that's something is missing. So we need to start to collect our data. To do that, we have to realize that data have different kind of ownerships. Yeah? That's why I think a lot of times when we define our project, we didn't define the right ownership of the data. So we just collect the data, and somehow by the end of the day, that data cannot be shared, cannot be used by other people, or the data is unusable at all, or the data is very intermittent, is not collect continuously. So, for example, Fabric, we have what we call the IoT middleware as a platform that allows you to collect data from sensors to ease your implementation, because data can come from many sources. Yeah, so you have to collect that data from different source of information. Sensors have different messages format, you know, they talk about REST, OAuth, MQTT, they have different kind. So you need to ensure that you have a fine ways of collection of data to simplify that. So Fabric platform collects that data. Then once the data is there, you have to understand who owns the data. So normally once it's either your personal, that one you can share or not. And then there is what we call government data. Government data, for me, patutnya government data should open lah. You give to other people because you already paid your tax lah, so it should be free. But somehow the government data is still not free. Only certain data is made public. But then there's also private data. People who have their own census, they collect it, but they don't share the data except for their own purpose. If you don't have all of this, then somehow someone needs to build what they call, you become a commercial sensor provider. You collect the data for others, then you can commercialize it. You know, for example, in the universities, you might have a project that collect information for environmental. You share that kind of information from various universities, 10 universities around Malaysia, different locations. You share that data because that's part of your program. But that needs to be really indicated at the early stage, yeah, so that you know when exactly, who that exactly that you can share the data. That's what's missing lah. If you say whether is there enough data, yeah, there's a lot of data around, but it's been kept in your server under the table under your computer. That's a big problem. Okay, we need to put somewhere in the cloud lah, better that way.
All right. Okay. Well, I believe there are some. Okay, we will go back to the one question on the data later. But before that, okay. So I would like to know also, how can an engineering and technology solution address the sustainability and environmental impact challenges associated with to build a smart world?
This is also a hot topic nowadays. We have heard about the ESG. People talk ESG, you know, I thought it's just like Ajinomoto, ESG, but then this ESG is environmental, social, and also the government's governance aspect. So environmental, we talk about the carbon-driven, low carbon aspect and all that. So that kind of sustainability, I mean, is part of the SDG goals. Yeah? So I think it's very important. When we talk about the whole world, we need to talk about how we tackle the environmental changes and challenges, I would say. So challenges, like for example, when we talk about the energy systems, we talk about how we use renewable energy. So maybe technologies like what we call just now the AI, IoT that collect the data can help you to even predict the energy demand that you require, how you can optimize the way that you distribute the energy, and also the reducing any waste. So you can adjust any, energy consumption. Just look at the usage patterns of the users, for example. Yeah, you can make it better. So I think smart grids, one way to do that, you can balance the energy production. You can balance the consumption in real time, most likely. You can do that. So smart buildings is also another aspect. Smart buildings or smart home, you can use sensors to monitor all this temperature, lighting, the occupancy of the people, the cooling part, the lighting part, because aircon is one of the things which is always, we are wasting a lot of electrical energy, energy waste. So we have to find ways to ensure that you switch off the aircon when there's no occupants, adjust the temperature, if like that, is always talk about environmental change. And then another aspect of, you look at the cities themselves, is the transportation. Yeah? So transportation is one of the biggest culprit that actually make our environmental bad. You just look at during the COVID time. When the COVID time, everyone is at home, all are being, you know, restricted their travel. The whole of city in Kuala Lumpur are very clean. Yeah, you can see, sometimes you see people send photos where animals can also go into the city because they see the city is very clean, no one is there. So, but of course, it's unrealistic when we see that COVID is over, we can see dark skies of Kuala Lumpur. You know, so we see the environmental effect of the whole environmental aspect. So, but then what can we do? I mean, then that's why I said like, smart transportation. So you build intelligent traffic management, you can reduce some congestion, you find ways of people to find the car park much easier, you know, so that the people don't try to drive around just to find the car parks. You look at technologies like the EV, the electrical vehicles nowadays. So Tesla is coming here to Malaysia. So they say 10,000 EV cars per what? But then actually they have debunked that actually it's more than only 3,000 lah. So you see, EV is also one way to reduce that kind of carbon emission. Then you look at agriculture aspect. You can agriculture is one way to ensure that you have a better way of producing oxygen and all that. So and then one last thing about this is that to help the sustainable the whole of the world is maybe the circular economy part. We can help them. Yeah, you use what we call the reuse thing, recycle thing, so you can minimize a lot of this kind of waste. So to ensure that you throw away your garbage in a proper way, or managing your waste management. That's one way that we can help.
Right. Okay. So I believe the key important elements in this smart world is that I believe we have to somehow find a way to capture all the data, right, in a proper way, and we have to make use of that data so that we can incorporate AI, right, to actually automate those tasks. Okay. So since we're dealing a lot with data, right, in the IoT, we mentioned about Internet of Things. It's not only human generating data, things, objects, sensors also generate data. So what are the potential risks and concerns in terms of privacy, data security, and ethical implications that need to be addressed in the smart world of tomorrow?
Yeah, I think this one of the main thing that have been discussed in many of the conferences. We cannot run away about this data privacy or data security. You know, people have not really talked about ethical part. But if you take a look at, I think the moment when it's digital, the moment when it's connected on the internet, there's a lot of things we open up. You know, I think your personal information cannot be exposed. So privacy is one of the real concerns that you have mentioned just now. How people use our data. We don't want them to use our data for, you know, for scam or spam, for example. You don't want people to violate your privacy of the data. So cameras are out there. How do you manage camera and tells you that, can you capture my facial and wherever I go? Is it something which is legal to do that? So are you intruding to my privacy, for example? Some organizations say that if you enter a building, you take a photo of your face, facial recognition, is it something legal? You know, so you have to talk to take a look at that. And then data that be collected from health information, how do you ensure that it's not being used by unscrupulous people? So, but then you want to use that data for insurance purpose, you know, for premiums and all that. But people don't want to use them for other purpose, like you deny the coverage. You know the health of the person, you deny any coverage. So privacy laws need to be taken care of. So maybe in one way, if you want to share the data, you can do what we call data anonymization. As well, you have to ensure that only certain data are being shared. Data security is always talk about the technical part, the security part where people devices are being compromised. People can hack the devices even to the applications level. So cyber attacks becoming more, you know, it's happening now. So how do you avoid that? So engineers like us have to mitigate that kind of risk. You have to find a way to better making sure that your security more robust to build in. You must have what we call a security audits, either from internal or external people. You have to educate this kind of practices in your organization. And finally, just now you talk about the ethical part. Other than the privacy security, what is the ethical part? How AI, for example, play a role in this ethical part? For example, AI can also displace your job. Yeah, it can replace your job. Is it ethical to do that? You're now losing your job because of AI or robots that's coming. So if AI make a wrong decision, who's accountable? If AI make a wrong decision, can cause harm, you know, who's responsible to do that? So there must be ethical guidelines to do that. Can AI make decisions for your health, for your legal for a lot of matters. That's why in many countries, AI is now becoming, when we ask this question, it should be regulated. But we are still at the very early stage. We only know ChatGPT, we know Midjourney, that's all, but we just use it, but we don't know what's the ethical part. People claim their photo is copyright. No, it's not copyright because it's been generated by a machine. It's not generated by you. It's not human. So you cannot claim your copyright. So that's something that we need to look at.
All right. Okay. Dr. Aslan, from the industry perspective, because we're in the economic side, so there's one question like this. How can the government, industry stakeholders, and academia work together to create an enabling environment for the development and deployment of smart technologies?
This is what we call the triple helix. Some call it quadruple helix, but we call it triple helix. If you mention about government, the industry, and also the academia. I think the government role is very, very, very important in terms of they are the policy makers. They are the one that make the regulation. So they have to ensure that when they do this, they also have to protect the consumer right to ensure that the safety, the privacy, the ethical concern that I mentioned earlier must be regulated. So they have to, but of course, they have to ensure that they don't want to stifle any innovation. We want to protect this, but we don't want to stifle. If they stifle the innovation, even you cannot have Grab here in Malaysia because you stifle the innovation because you have too regulated. We don't have Gojek that can have, you know, you have motorcycle riding, e-hailing. We don't have that in Malaysia because it's regulated. But people want to ensure that it's safe and all that. In Malaysia, we don't have that. So it's stifle one part, but you also encourage certain part. And then we look at drones and where it can fly. So regulatory is very important. We see the government role to fund your R&D. The R&D is very important. So you want to stimulate innovations, you must have the R&D fund. We want the government to also building up the right infrastructure, the network, broadband networks. They have, you know, invest in this kind of infrastructure. And then you see the role of the industry. You mentioned just now, the industry is the one that is the stakeholders, the people who build companies, startups, your new business. These are the people at the front lines of developing any new technology. They are the ones that invest in the innovation. They are the one that implement your solutions. They are the one that buy or sell your solutions. So that's one thing. So they want to stifle that whole industry. You get jobs because the industry is booming. Yeah? And you look at the academia part, I'm sure you are the one that are the forefront of the research. You are the one that conduct any new technologies. You want to be at the forefront. You find new ideas. You find your new solutions. You are that space, and you also helping the creating the new workforce with new mindsets of new technologies. You are the one that create new programs, ensuring that is you are more relevant. The skills that which the industry needs. So that's the role of the academia part. So this is a very good way of for us, the triple helix part lah, that we have to work together.
Yeah. Okay. Looking the time, I think we are shorting of time. Okay. 1 hour is a really short time. Okay. To this, there are many things we can discuss. Okay. Just maybe one last question, and also as a concluding remarks, I would like Dr. Maslan to tell us what the skill sets and competency do engineer and technologies need to develop to effectively contribute to the smart world of tomorrow?
In a short one, I think because we are short of time, I think one, you have to be proficient in all these new skills that you're going to learn. You must have that solid understanding. That's why I think the last two semesters, try to build up that new courses, new subjects. Talk about AI, IoT, machine learning, blockchain, cloud, it's all that. So you learn that. The new emerging technologies. And also, you have to build skills in terms of cybersecurity, very important. You have to build that trust to ensure that people wants to use this, expose their data, they know where their data gonna be. I think data scientists, analytics, you guys in the AI world is one of the things which is very, very wanted in the industry. Of course, the engineering world, you need the people not only understand the integrity part, you must have the skills to understand the whole concept, the whole thing in system level. you know how things are connected, put the jigsaw puzzle together. You also need the skill of the engineers and technology that understand how to sustain and making sure the environmental aspect, the world is no longer just technology, but you have to ensure that sustainability is one of the things. Soft skill, I'm sure you know soft skills are very important. The problem skill, thinking skill, critical thinking, creativity, all that is needed. And of course, the ethical part. The ethical mentioned about you have to consider the impact of these new technologies to your work and so on and so forth. I think finally, it's a long things that you need to learn. It's always talk about the lifelong learning. I mean, for us to be always be intact in the future, we have to always be updated with the latest technologies. What you learn today might be obsolete tomorrow. So there's nothing that the last advice is actually the lifelong learning. Okay, back to you, Dr. Yeo.
Right, thank you, Dr. Maslang. So, okay, to all the audience, that was the discussion for this interstitial dialogue on the topic of enabling the smart world of tomorrow, innovations and challenges in engineering and technologies. Right, thank you, Dr. Maslang. Okay, now I think we'll pass back to Mr. G, our MC today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Yeo and Dr. Maslang. We will now proceed to take our group photo. I would like to invite everyone to turn on your camera. While we wait for everyone to on your camera, I would like to also proceed to give a certificate of appreciation to Dr. Maslang Abbas. Thank you very much for your time today, for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it very much. Thank you very much. We will send it to you also after the event.
Okay. It's a virtual world, smart world.
Okay. So let us then now. Let me just stop presenting for a while. Okay. Let's just, we will just do a quick countdown, maybe in 10 seconds for those who have not on your camera. Much appreciated. Okay, I think we are about there. Okay. Okay, let me just do a 5-second countdown then, okay? Okay, so 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Click. Okay, let us just save that. And we will take another one to be safe. 50-50 chance. Okay, so 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Click. Okay. Let me save that. We just save that. And Okay. On behalf of DIFCON MECON 23 committee, we would like to express our gratitude and appreciation to Dr. Maslang Abbas again for taking your time on this early Friday morning, and also to Dr. Yeo for assisting and supporting us to being the moderator for our session today. Our sincere appreciation also to all our MMU colleagues and also to anyone from outside of MMU for your time and support for our event, and we hope to see you all again in next year's event. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Maslang.